Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
Dan, good Saturday afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to catch another edition of Our Drift.
Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
Good Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, so good to be here. Lots to talk about this week, but let's take care of our little business. The Current, the March edition, is going to be out in a few weeks. So if there is still time, if you want to advertise in The Current, to give me a call, 734-629-6010, and get your business advertised in The Current newspaper. Now, The Current's grown 500% or so over the last 8 years. And you can brand and grow your business like we've grown ours. So
still not grown as fast as the federal debt.
Yeah, well, under Barack.
Oh, maybe it has.
Under, as my son says, Zachary says, Barack insane Obama instead of Hussein, which, there you go. I told him I thought that was cute.
Give him a shout out for...
give him a shout out. Yeah. There you go. But the big news this week, of course, was the terrorism. Oh, Barack's great... Barack, his great response to the 21 heads being removed from Christians in Egypt, or in Libya, actually, but they were Egyptians.
Right, Coptic Christians from Egypt that were... I asked myself, what were they doing there? And apparently, a lot of Egyptians from these poor villages will go to Libya seeking work.
Yeah, because it's a port. You know, there's work to be had there. There's oil there. There's rigs to work on. There's ports to work on. And, of course, you know, maybe they were spreading the Christianity. Yeah. Probably not the smartest thing to do in a crazy Muslim town, but...
yeah, I hadn't heard any of that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true. I'm just saying, you know, I'm sure that's what the Muslims are saying. You bring your Christianity here. That's not Sharia.
No, I don't even think you have to bring anything. You just, if you're not one of them, then you deserve to die in the most gruesome manner possible. And I think a lot of people, like myself, are really getting sick and disgusted by this constant bombardment of these atrocities that with no end in sight.
Yeah.
You know, and that prompted the Egyptian Air Force to go on a little bombing mission there. But again, I look at it like, okay, that's all great, but why hasn't this been the case from the get-go with these people?
Yeah, well, and what's our response as Americans? Number one, we're going to talk about this later, but we don't back up the Egyptians as they go to war against ISIS. Really? We're not going to back them up? We give them $1 billion a year for their military, and we're not going to give them the thumbs up for trying to kick back at ISIS for killing 21 citizens of Egypt?
Well, you know, it's interesting that the Egyptian military under Sisi, you know, the new former defense minister, now president of Egypt, and I don't know the exact details and numbers, but I know that he is shifting away from purchasing arms to a certain degree to go with the French, because the French made him kind of an offer he couldn't refuse, saying, hey, you can't pay back the loan to finance the purchase of these munitions, we'll pay it off for you, the French government.
That's a deal.
And that's a great deal. But the more important to the point that I wanted to make is that Assisi and the Egyptians look at America as a very unreliable partner.
And that would be true. We are very unreliable.
Yes.
That and the fact, come on, it's you might be able to get a bunch of surplus World War II French military gear. It's only been dropped once.
No, I think it's top of the I think it's top notch stuff. And I mean, because of what we do, all this have a democracy. If you don't, we'll cut off arms sales to you.
Yeah.
So stuff gets cut off. They can't rely. I mean, how can you have a military that can do anything if you don't have an ample, steady supply? Logistics are very crucial. Spare parts, initial purchases of the big stuff, the jets and everything.
Yeah.
You got to have an assurance that you can buy that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, Obama's Arab Spring went so well that... You know.
Yeah, that really went well.
Yeah. What's amazing
to me
is
Hillary Clinton as well.
Yeah, this crazy summit, anti-extremism summit of Barack Obama, who can't even say the word radical Islam or Islamic terrorism. Come on. It doesn't matter. We've had this discussion before. It doesn't matter what you think it is. Those people who are committing the acts consider themselves Islam.
And they
don't consider themselves radical by any stretch of the imagination.
And they're the first to tell you that they are the true Islam.
And they are.
I mean, they are out there shouting it at us, and our leadership will not.
Let's get this straight too, because I will get people like Ken calling in. You know what? The moderates, if you want to call them moderates, these are the reformists. If there's a Muslim who doesn't believe in spreading Sharia and doesn't believe in jihad, those are reformed Muslims who aren't living by the code of the Quran and Sharia. They've moderated. Thank goodness. Love them. You know, I'd love to see a Muslim who's as peaceful as any other American or world citizen who doesn't want to impose their strict religion on me or anyone else. And those people are always welcome. You know, I love peace-loving people. I'm a peaceful guy, aren't I?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, you know, when you look at any of these brutal revolutions that have taken place through history, and for some reason, the Khmer Rouge comes to mind. And when you have this fanatical killing, willing to kill and die. I mean, in fact, well, ISIS is probably even worse than the Khmer Rouge, if you can imagine that, because I don't think the Khmer Rouge leadership wanted to die in the process or looked at it as a great thing. They wanted to win and live. But the atrocities and the killing and everything that they did in Cambodia in the late 60s and through the mid 70s was just as bad, probably. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say I shouldn't compare these two things, apples and oranges, but the brutality, there's a certain on-par thing. And my whole point, and again, I have to keep backing up and giving my point, is that when you're so intimidated as, a peasant in Cambodia, and you have these people coming into your village, you're going to pretty much play ball with them.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean,
so maybe you don't. It's in your heart. You don't want to play ball with them. Just like maybe some Muslims don't want to play ball with ISIS in Mosul. But you got to go along and pretend that you are.
Yeah, just to survive. Just to survive. Well, this counterterrorism or this anti-extremism summit that Barack had, there was one thing that bothered me. I mean, it was mostly Muslims, which I kind of think is wrong. You know, but there was a story, and I linked it up on the Daily Drift today. We didn't invite our own FBI director to this summit. There were some FBI people there, but they didn't invite the FBI director, James Comey, right? But why was Alexander Bortnikov, the Russians' head of information and FBI type, it's like his counterpart, why was he there? And not our FBI director. Shouldn't they have been holding hands and be there together as a show of force?
Is he like the public relations guy for the FSB, the Russian Federal Security Bureau?
No, he's the director of the Russian Federal Security Service.
Oh, he's the actual, he's the head the cheese. Director. He's not the spokesperson. He's the actual
head
guy.
Head cheese.
Wow.
And I can't believe that. He's the head cheese of Russia's FBI, and ours wasn't allowed to come?
Wow. Incredible stuff.
If there's nothing, I'm speechless, really. When I heard this, I was just absolutely dumbfounded. And it should go to the very point that something is so fishy wrong, smelly wrong. Something is not right, America. You have to look at this administration and say, what the heck is going on in that White House that they would allow a summit like that to happen and have that guy there, but not our own FBI head?
And probably gave all of these people a grand tour of the NSA, CIA, Pentagon.
Maybe he was returning Edward Snowden's files. But when you see that kind of thing, that the other big news for me this week, and I was so happy and so proud, and he just jumped huge on my list for presidential running. I don't know if he will. He probably not. But Rudy Giuliani's comments this week. You know, said it before, this time it got some traction. He says Barack Obama does not love America. And I had to agree. I was sitting in my car listening, and I said, yes, that is absolutely true. And we've said it before, I think, on this show, but I've never heard somebody of importance and stature like Rudy Giuliani say it. And he explained. He just didn't shoot it out there. He explained it in a way that, well, let's
and
have.
And then when attacked, he wouldn't back down.
No, he wouldn't. And
he
so
fired
Derek,
back again. Said, "I'm not backing down."
Right. You got that first track. Let's listen to. So, and I got this. This isn't when he actually said it at the private fundraising party for Scott Walker. This is what he said when he was, I think, sandbagged. Bloomberg, these two liberal pundits on Bloomberg News brought these guys in.
These DBs?
Yeah. Let's play the first track of that, Derek.
You said about the president that he doesn't love America. You said, I do not believe that the president loves America. Is that what you meant to say? Is that what you think?
That's the impression I get from what he says, yes. That he doesn't have a deep, abiding love for this country the way other presidents do, that he seeks to criticize it more than uplift it, and doesn't get the notion of American exceptionalism. I felt that for a long time, and honestly, what you just said, I probably have said 50 other times in slightly different ways, some of which has actually been covered, but never quite got this amount of attention. The one that probably put me off over the top is when he described American exceptionalism as being no different than Greek exceptionalism, failing to recognize that Greece never emancipated its slaves, and how you can compare American exceptionalism to any other country, for me, is very hard to believe.
Well, Mr. Mayor, presumably Greeks love their country, too, and the president has stated many times that he loves his country, so I'm curious why you can't take that notion at face value, that the president and you disagree on a lot of things, but that he's still sincere in his professed love for the country.
I'm willing to take him at his word that he's sincere in his professed beliefs, but I think his beliefs indicate that he is basically a critic of the country, and I think his whole background and development kind of made him that way.
What do you mean by background?
You referring to?
But the background I'm referring to is the association with Frank Marshall Davis, the association with the Saul Alinsky group, which essentially seeks the overthrow of the power structures in our government through peaceful means. I'm talking about the fact that he very often, even overseas, will find ways to criticize America, sitting in Reverend Wright's church for 17 years after Reverend Wright said, not God bless America, but God damn America. I think even if I wasn't in the pew that day, I'd quit that church. So I don't personally, and this is my interpretation and opinion, I don't get from the president that same sense that he has that deep, abiding, almost romantic love of America that I used to see in Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. I see him more as a guy, a patriot, but from the point of view of wanting to criticize us and improve us, and I think he'd do a better job if he did it with a lot more positive reinforcement.
Okay.
What he said about Jeremiah Wright, that's exactly what I was thinking during that conversation there. And also, let's not forget his two, President Barack Obama's two buddies, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers.
Yes.
And then he comes up with this cover crapola story that makes no sense. Well, when they were out bombing federal institutions and raging their terror, I was like, 4 years old. But you're friends with them now.
Yeah.
That's the point, not how old you were when they were doing their thing. That's like saying that I become a pen pal with Charles Manson and someone calls me out on it. And I say, well, when he was out killing people, I was just a little kid.
Yeah.
That's not the point.
Yeah, he's still an evil guy.
He's still an evil guy.
And those people are still anti-American people.
Yeah,
you know?
So that's exactly.
And let's face it.
How much do they love America?
Yeah.
And they're still running around like a you-know-what.
Yes.
Blaming America for everything and criticizing everything.
He was not raised like most average Americans. He had a communist Kenyan father. His mother was a communist. His grandparents were communists. His mentors were communists. His second father, a stepfather, was a Muslim. He does not represent America, the ideals of America, never has, and doesn't believe in them. And so people, why we elected this man.
Yes.
Twice.
And Harvard
is hard to believe.
Harvard isn't exactly Hillsdale College either.
That's exactly right. This man has done everything that's been anti-American from the day one, and we wonder why. And when they say take his words at face value, actions speak louder than words. And when I looked at these two pundits, I think it was Bloomberg, I can't remember the name of the show. You'd have to go to the website. It's there. You can watch it. And they're saying, take him for his face value of his words. No, his words don't match his actions. They never have. It's incredible that he can even discuss that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, it's...
And you know, what bothers me the most is the hypocrisy of it, because, you know, Barack Obama can say nasty things about George Bush, and yet nobody wants to hold him accountable. But here's all of the media trying to hold Rudy Giuliani accountable. Let me assure you, Rudy Giuliani said exactly the right thing. He spoke the truth. And that's what's happened in this country. When you speak the truth, you get crapped on. And that's what the media is trying to do. They're trying to make Rudy Giuliani look bad. Derek, you got that track from Ed Henry gets Josh Disearnest, or Josh Earnest, on there. You got that one ready? Let's play this. This is the reaction from the White House talking about, and Ed Henry calls him out on it.
Do you think the president has any regrets about saying President Bush was unpatriotic for adding $4 trillion to the debt?
And I don't know if sorrow is the word that I would use. I think
you feel sorry for Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, I do. I do feel sorry for him.
You feel sorry, but does the president have any regrets, regardless of what Giuliani said? As a candidate, Senator Obama said that President Bush was unpatriotic.
I think, again, I haven't seen the actual comments. I don't know if you have them there in front of you.
He said that the president, I'm paraphrasing this part, had added about $4 trillion to the debt, and then he said, quote, that's irresponsible, that's unpatriotic. Yeah. So I see a difference from Giuliani because he's talking about an issue, but nonetheless questioning the patriotism of the President of the United States.
Yeah. I think that what the president was doing was he was questioning the specific wisdom of that decision. And questioning whether or not that was in the best interest of the country.
That's unwise. He said that's unpatriotic.
Right. But again, he was talking about that. He was not talking about a person. And again, I think there is a lot that the president also had to say in the State of the Union about the level of our discourse. And there is no doubt that we're going to have significant disagreements across the aisle. And that is ultimately what a democracy is all about, where we go in and we debate the issues. But the president, as you'll recall in the State of the Union, said we should have a debate that's worthy.
Okay.
What a sweeping under the rug.
Yeah.
Of the facts and the point of the question.
Yeah, it's amazing how hypocritical, and let alone the fact that he criticized Bush for spending $4 trillion and has now spent, what, $8 trillion? I don't know how Josh Disearnest can sit up there day after day and take the abuse from the, what, well, not all of the abuse, but some of the people are at least in the White House press corps beginning to see and say, hey, wait a minute. I don't get it.
And even so, it's a very soft tone. It's not an accusatory, name-calling, disrespectful tone that it was when George Bush was in the office. President Barack Obama still is treated with kid gloves, even in spite of being occasionally asked a direct question of one of his representatives.
Yeah, and he gets the softball treatment.
Exactly.
And there's really, I mean, you could see the liberal media just seething when they spoke to the press corps of George W. Bush. You know, it was just anger. And yet, I love Ed Henry, but he's always diplomatic about it. You know, it's amazing that people will ignore.
Yeah, the double standard is just unbelievable. And also, you know, if we're talking about patriotism, I don't care if you're the most, well, maybe I shouldn't say this, but you're the most flaming liberal out there. And if you're asked the direct question, who loves America more, George Bush or Barack Obama? I would think if a flaming liberal was honest, they would say, I didn't like George Bush, but I'll have to admit he loves America more than Barack Obama.
Absolutely.
Don't you think that would be an honest answer? Oh,
that would be an honest answer. I admit, actions speak louder than words. You know, the very fact that George Bush, for the most part, has not said one word to criticize Barack Obama, you know, that in itself speaks volumes of his being a gentleman and
dignity.
And the dignity. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Respectful to the office.
Yes.
And the criticism he took from former presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, former Vice President Al Gore, it was relentless. They piled on with the media, the accusations and the, you know, and you know, talking about the media, remember the Dan Rather scandal?
Yeah.
Didn't it turn out that this document that Dan Rather was touting as legitimate
and
authentic. It was done with a word processor that didn't even exist back in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, it was completely phony. Well, we've had Jimmy on the line. He wants to talk real quick about the GOP convention going on today, I think, unless it's over with. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing? Yeah, we just adjourned here a little while ago. We're actually on our way home. But you want the scoop?
Sure.
Did you draft Mitt Romney?
Ronald Romney McDaniel, yeah. She won.
Year. Now, is that a good thing?
Yep.
That's Mitt.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't vote for her. I voted for Kim Shima. But that's okay. We'll find out, I guess.
Right.
You know, I like Jeff Sakowa, her vice chair, her co-chair.
Okay.
I think he's an excellent person. Actually, I was considering voting for her because of him, because he actually will run the party. She's going to suck up for money, and he runs the party. You know, that's
okay.
Kind of the way it works.
Well, we'll have to just wait and see, Jimmy, like you said, and see what where they butter their bread, I guess, you know.
Exactly. I mean, if she does what she said she was going to do, it'll be a good thing.
Okay.
Because the county parties will wind up with more money for local races, and the state party will take care of the people that are running for state, you know, the governor and so on. Speaking of the governor, he didn't even have the time to show up and even be there today.
Well, that's no surprise. That's no surprise.
He's planning his presidential run.
Not to mention the fact that there were, you know, there was no booths supporting 15-1. Not one.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. So, what was the general feeling of the convention there? No support for the gas tax raise?
It's about 90%.
Against?
Against.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that's easy. There are Republicans that are going, you know, Mike Shirky was there, of course, he was all for it. And people like that, but Pat Kobach had his big no button on, and I like the other one they had, milk cows, not taxpayers. That was pretty good.
I've got that bumper sticker, yeah. Okay, well, excellent. Well, Jimmy, thank you so much for calling in and reporting on that. Let us know how Romney and Sakowa do in their positions, and keep us appraised of that situation, would you?
Oh, sure, I certainly will. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, Wilkinson won for, you know, co-chair, which is a good thing, too. Our vice chair down that's basically a committee. You're basically on the committee is what you are if you're a vice chair. And, you know, that's a real good thing. So with Sakowa and Wilkinson and Giles, the ethnic chair, I think we're really going to do... We're really going to start moving in a different direction.
Good, good.
Bottom up.
Well, it's nice to have a little good news for a change, Jimmy, so I appreciate that that update. All right, you take care, Jimmy. Hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Bye. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, how much time we got before the break there, Derek? 1 minute. All right, so we're going to hang out. Mike, hang on the line. We're going to go to the break, and when we come back, we'll get Mike's comments. He wants to talk about Rudy Giuliani. And I
thought you were going to say RuPaul. I don't know. You said RuPaul from MTV?
MTV, yeah.
Yeah, remember in the 80s.
Yeah. Was RuPaul a transgender or a transsexual? I can't remember. What is the difference anyways? I don't even know.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Anyways, he was like the guy he was the guy that really made it famous, wasn't he? I mean, I can remember the song, kind of, but I don't remember.
He let it all hang out.
Oh, that's terrible, too.
Thank God we have the break.
Yes. All right, so when we come back, we'll talk a little more about Rudy Giuliani. Mike, hang on the line. We'll get you in a minute.
Blaze Radio News. I'm Kay Long. America's mayor not backing down from comments he makes about President Obama's patriotism.
I'm right about this. I have no doubt about it. I do not withdraw my words. If the president goes and makes a speech and talks about what a great country this is, if the president could complete the following sentence: during the Crusades, the Christians were barbarians, and so were the Muslims. If the president could say Islamic fundamentalist terrorism is our enemy, I will applaud the president. But until he does that, I will have doubts about his emotions, his feelings, his attitudes, and the way in which he developed.
Giuliani on the Sean Hannity Show on Fox. A police officer shot and wounded as he responds to a burglary, this in Minneapolis, the chief saying the officer targeted. He's in satisfactory condition at the hospital. A huge Obamacare glitch as some 800,000 customers sent the wrong tax information. About 50,000 already filing may have to do their taxes again. Meanwhile, the Obama administration extending the deadline for people to sign up. The Blaze Radio's Tom Peace.
The deadline now extended through April to avoid tax penalties for going uncovered in 2015. Conservative commentator Charles Krauthammer calling problems with Obamacare predictable.
And it's also a reflection of the unbelievable complexity of a law that was intended to remake 1/6 of the American economy. And as a result, you get the glitches, you get the incompetence, and now you're going to get this unilateral creation of a new period that is nowhere in the law and is of extremely dubious legality.
Krauthammer on Fox News Special Report.
The Siberian Express expected to continue causing misery for millions of Americans most of next week. People living in Missouri to the Mid-Atlantic and the Deep South expecting more ice, snow, and record-breaking cold. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake. Clean out your attic, your garage, and your house. It's time to sell your unwanted treasures. The Salem Area Historical Society, or SAHS, is holding a flea market and yard sale Saturday, May 23rd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. This will be a community-wide yard sale featuring flea market and resale items. You can buy a space to sell your items, or you can donate items to SAHS, with all proceeds from their sale going to SAHS General Fund. 10-foot by 10-foot spaces are $8 for members and $13 for non-members. Applications are available on the Salem Area Historical Society's website, and for more information, visit SAHSHistory.org. Public Act 60 allows parents of students in grades 6 through 12 to enroll their children in up to 2 online classes per term at approved programs. A2 Virtual Plus, a program of the Ann Arbor Public Schools which offers online classes to students throughout Michigan, will hold open forums at the following neighborhood public libraries: the Saline District Library, Thursday, January 15th at 6:30 p.m., the Chelsea District Library, Thursday, January 22nd at 6 p.m., the Ann Arbor District Library, Traverwood, Monday, January 26th at 6 p.m., and the Dexter District Library, Thursday, January 29th at 6 p.m. For more information, call 734-997-1208 or visit a2virtual.org. You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. Wham! Talk 1600. In touch with your community. You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thank you for tuning in to Catch Our Drift. Joining me in studio, Brandon Drake.
Thank you much.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about. We're talking about Rudy Giuliani, but before we do that, let's take care of a little business here. If you have a need of a water softener, try Country Water Treatment. Call 248-437-9136. And in the current newspaper, Country Water Treatment has some great coupons, and it's tough dealing with hard water, well water. And if you live out in this area, a lot of us are on well water. So Country Water Treatment is really the best place to take care of your rusty, smelly water problems. And again, that's 248-437-9136. Right now, they've got a coupon in the current for saving $100 with the purchase of any water softener. So if you're due for a new water softener, this is the place to go, Country Water Treatment.
Hey, when you have well water, do you get it tested for arsenic and radon and all that kind of stuff?
You do. You're actually supposed to have that done when you buy the house. You take a little water sample down to the county, and the county approves. And I think that's supposed to happen every time you buy as well, you know, update it. When we moved into our latest house, we had really good water. And then the township did some deep drilling for...
Fracking?
No, it wasn't fracking. It was for... they were digging to put in a new sewer system or something, and they, like, used those dewatering devices and sucked a lot of water out of the ground. Mm. And they actually drained a swamp, and it came back. But our water's never been the same since, because we're, like, seven or eight houses from where they did it. And I think they really kind of screwed up the water table a little bit, you know?
It's terrible.
Yeah, it was brutal. But a good softener can handle that, so... There you go. Nice segue. Well, let's take a call from Mike, who's been very patient dealing, wants to talk about Rudy Giuliani. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. By the way, RuPaul might have been Obama's girlfriend.
Hey, it might be Michelle.
Yeah. No, the question I have is, why haven't other Republicans had the guts to talk about Obama the way Rudy Giuliani? I'm so glad that finally a prominent Republican has had the guts to say what is on the minds of a lot of people in this country. For a long, long time, even before he was elected, all you had to do was look at his past and see that this guy was not anything but a communist, period.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he is. He was raised by communists. His grandparents were communists. He was associated with a well-known communist. This guy has been nothing but a leftist. They call him a radical. He's a flat-out communist. And thank you, Rudy Giuliani, for finally saying it. And I blame people like George W. Bush. You know, you were congratulating him for being a good man and being, you know, proper and everything else. This was the president of the United States for 8 years. It is his duty to open his mouth and say, look, you're ruining the country. He has been quiet like a church mouse.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I blame him for that.
Yeah, I would like to see him speak up, but again, I think that goes to George Bush being, I think he's a gentleman and respects the office enough that he doesn't want to do to Barack what Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter and the rest of them have done to him. You know, I'll give him credit for that. You're right. I wish he would speak up as well. I'd love to have his thoughts on it. But
yeah, and Mike, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I'm just not sure that I want to see a former president you know, criticizing, and I see pluses and minuses to it. But where I will totally agree with you is when President Bush was in office and he kept silent a lot of the time when the critics were just coming at him from every direction and making up some of the most incredible, preposterous lies, that he stayed silent too often and allowed the left to define him. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think was a very huge strategic mistake during his presidency.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we are paying the price for that now as a nation. We are being driven down into the ground by this man and the Democratic Party. And this is one of the reasons why I say I don't mind a former president opening his mouth and criticizing the sitting president. This is done all over the world.
Yeah.
This is done in every other country. I don't care where you are. In England, John Major would go after Tony Blair, or vice versa. So this is something, you know, forget this my fellow congressman or my fellow gentleman. This is baloney. This is hardcore politics. This is the life and death of this country. I also wanted to say, I turned your program on and I heard you talking about Sisi. You know, Obama and the liberals and this government have basically destroyed the Middle East. He told Mubarak he had to go. He told Gaddafi he had to go. He's told Assad he has to go. He's basically turned the Middle East into nothing but a powder keg, and it's blown up in our faces.
I agree.
Do you realize that after the peace conference over a week ago in Minsk, the first person to go to see Sisi was Vladimir Putin? The Russians are now putting in a nuclear plant in Egypt. They are going to be building probably a naval base in Alexandria. They're going to have the Suez Canal. He has a naval base in Syria. And you were talking about, you know, how we cut off Sisi from military supplies? Well, guess who's going to supply him with MiGs and tanks and missiles?
The French.
It's going to be Putin.
And the French.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The French, as the French are concerned, the French to me are nothing but they're spineless like linguine. Period.
No, they are, but they are huge arms sellers around the world. I think they're right up there with us. They've always been.
But what I'm concerned about is the influence that Putin is going to have with Sisi and the control in the Middle East, and we've basically handed it over to them. We have lost all of North Africa. Algeria right now is going to be the next powder keg. Look what's happening in Libya. And here's the consequence to all of us. We've turned, Obama has inflamed the Middle East, and guess what's happening? We are now going to start getting refugees be pouring into our country from the disaster that he created.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's happening right now with Italy.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands over the past few years are coming from Libya because that is the closest point to the most southern Italian possession, some islands, and they are coming over there. And the Italians, you know what they do? I heard this morning. What they do is these reception centers, these aren't detention centers, these are reception centers. They bring these people in, and they're free to move around and go about wherever they want to go, and the Italians have a vested interest in doing this because they want them out of Italy. So what these people will do is they'll hang around, and they get their free cigarettes and their food and their health care, and as soon as they feel like they're up to it, they take off and they go and they infiltrate all through rest of Europe.
Well, you know what's going to happen right now? You have in Germany right now, you have Pegida, which is headquartered in Dresden. This is a right-wing movement, and the right-wing movement of Marie Le Pen in France is going to be the thing that stops this. And that is basically going to be the salvation of Europe. God help France if Hollande still stays there. I'm praying that Marie Le Pen gets into power in France, and the people in what used to be Eastern Germany in Dresden, the Pegida movement, that they assume some power, and this is going to stop the migration. I can tell you something right now. A good friend of mine told me a while back, he lives back in Europe, and he said, in Germany, right now, the anger between the German people and the immigrants is ready to explode. And we're going to end up with the Syrian refugees. We're going to have them deposited here. And God help us here. If we start getting the people coming from Syria, we have no documentation who they are. We have no idea what their political gains are. And then we're going to find ourselves with nests of ISIS and Al-Qaeda people all over this country.
Yeah, that's happening.
Thank you, Mr. Obama.
I believe that this was all part of Barack. I'm call me the conspiracy nut if you want, but I think...
No, you're not a nut. I can tell you something. This is, just take a look at what's happened in the last 6 years that he's been in power.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the immigration of Muslims is increasing on a yearly basis. And for him, you know what he said? He said this before and got some grief about it. But at this meeting he had this week, the summit, he said it again. Here in America, Obama stated, Islam has been woven into the fabric of our country since its founding. That is a lie. That is an outright lie. And yet this man is telling it. I'm telling you, he's a Muslim. He's a Muslim plant. He's a Muslim whatever. And he's here to destroy America by bringing in more Muslims.
Yeah, there was Muhammad
Apple. Radical Muslims.
There was Muhammad Appleseed. He planted all the apple trees.
Well, you take a look in places like, for instance, I originally lived in Milwaukee. And friends, and I haven't been back for quite a while. I talked to some friends of mine from Milwaukee, and I said, what's it like there now? And he says, my God, you wouldn't believe that. In Milwaukee, he says, we never had mosques here. He says, we've got over a half a dozen mosques here in Milwaukee. We've got parts of Milwaukee now that you can't even drive into.
So now we have Milwaukistan?
Yep.
And Mike, what you said about Libya and Algeria and Syria and all these other countries, there is a plan. Barack Obama does have a plan to solve all of these issues, and that is he's going to bring Hillary Clinton back in as his special envoy. She's going to have a bag of reset buttons, and she's going to go and visit each of those countries.
Well, you know what? I hope to God that somebody starts some of the stuff that they supposedly have on Hillary Clinton. I heard a guy on one of the talk shows, I think it was Bennett's show a couple weeks ago, and said, well, Republicans are holding this for next year to go after Hillary. You go after her now. You destroy her now. You don't go after her when she's been nominated. You go after her now. You don't get even allow her to get to the nomination.
Yeah.
And the sad part about it is I'm afraid the Republicans... I've been a Republican all my life, but I'll tell you very frankly, I am so disappointed in them that, as far as I'm concerned, I won't contribute another penny to them. I'll contribute to I like Scott Walker, I'll contribute to him, but nothing anymore to the Republican Party. As far as I'm concerned, the Republican Party has no spine.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. Yeah,
no, I agree.
I would definitely agree.
Well, I enjoy your show, gentlemen, and I just found you a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to be a loyal listener.
Well, great, Mike. We appreciate it. Well, I want you to listen to our next clip, since we're talking, Mike. And Mike, hang on the line. In fact, I want to get your take on this next clip, because since we're talking about hypocrisy and preposterous lies, I want both of you to hear this.
And I just want to say, Mike, to you, before we hang up here, you know, you're articulate, you make great points, and I enjoy your calls. I really do. So this has been fantastic.
Yeah. So hang on, Mike. I want to get your take on this. Derek, let's play that next track, would you? This is David Axelrod was being interviewed at, I think, a Chicago University or something. But let's hear this.
And I'm proud of the fact that basically you've had an administration that's been in place for 6 years in which there hasn't been a major scandal.
What?
Did I hear right?
You did.
There hasn't been a major scandal?
There has not been a major scandal in the Obama administration, according to David Axelrod. What was your take on that, Mike? Do you agree with that?
I'm in shock. I just fell off my chair. This whole administration, every day of it has been a nightmare and has been a scandal. I heard someone once say that wait about 5 or 6 years if he ever leaves office, and I still have doubts that he's going to leave office. But 5 or 6 years after he leaves office, when they start finding the garbage that has been gone on with him and the crimes that have been committed by this administration, to be honest with you, we should have a parliamentary system, and we should be able to give a no vote of confidence and throw the bum out.
Yes, yeah.
It's that point, isn't it?
I've thought about that 100 times myself in the last 6 years, Mike. It's a shame.
Well, let's just hope for the next 20 months or whatever this guy is in that we can survive, and then one other thing, I have a suggestion. This might be something that can bear some fruit. You know, every one of our past presidents has lifetime Secret Service protection. Maybe they would govern differently if, once they leave the White House, the Secret Service protection was gone and they had to live like the rest of us.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly.
Nope. Well, great show, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mike.
The call. Okay, so...
No scandals.
I heard that, and you wouldn't have believed the audience reaction. They all applauded and clapped. And I'm
like
thinking,
sheep.
What liberal douche university is this, and where did these people come from? What rock have you been living under that you think there's not a scandal in the last 6 years in the Barack Hussein Obama White House? It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, they're all probably in the audience thinking, it's George Bush had the scandals, not our president.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing about becoming a parliament-type system, a parliamentarian system, is I can just hear some Canadians right now listening and going, see, you dumb Americans, we had it right all along.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so the next thing I wanted to talk about was why in the world would the U.S. military announce their plans for retaking Mosul 2 months from now in the spring?
Well, Dwight D. Eisenhower, he announced the invasion of D-Day in advance, the time and the place, everything, didn't he? Oh, wait, he didn't.
Oh, that's right. He didn't.
He didn't.
And we've got a track here that I wanted to play. Derek, do you have he's on the phone. We've got the lines just lighting up here. Is there somebody I can take on one of those lines? Probably.
Yeah, just take a chance. Bring him up.
Let's just try one, shall we? If it's blinking, that means I can take it, right? All right, hey, welcome to the show. I don't know who this is because we don't.
Hi.
Hello.
My name is Fran, and I'm from Taylor, Michigan. And I don't think President Obama is going to really necessarily leave the office. I think he's going to go to the UN because he doesn't act like a president. He acts like he's the emperor of the world. And if you listen to how he speaks, what really irritated me the other day is when he said the we. Who is we? Your Communist Party? He speaks as a communist, and people don't are clear thinking enough to see through that. If he leaves, which, you know, I agree with the last gentleman, he might not leave. Of course, he could call martial law the day after the elections. He'll have control over FCC and black out all news and the internet, and he can take over or not succeed, or he'll go right into the general orator of the UN. Because Worms is a man that has that much power and thinks so highly of themselves. Where can he go? What can he do? The only place where he can go where he can fulfill his lifelong ambition would probably be the president of the UN.
Wow. So we'd have Kofi Annan, Ban Ki-moon, and Barack Hussein Obama.
And then even worse, maybe 20, 30 years from now, President Sasha Obama.
Where would a megalomaniac like that go? There is no place for him to go. There isn't an office. There isn't a country. He would have to go to the UN.
Yeah, it'll be amazing. Yeah,
he would love it there.
Yeah, it'll be amazing to see where he does go when he retires from office. So, well, great call. Appreciate Ann, right?
And from Taylor.
Fran, okay.
Oh, well, Fran, I thought Fran. It was Ann.
Well, thanks, Fran, for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank
and I hope, and
you're
call,
welcome.
Call again.
Thank you.
Yes, I will. Bye-bye.
All right. So, Derek, do you have that track ready from, this is General McInerney and Senator Tom Cotton. You got that one ready? Maybe. Yes. All right. Here we go. Talking about why in the world we're releasing military information.
Megan, it's good to be on with you. It's very mystifying why this administration would have revealed potential plans to retake Mosul. If a private in Iraq had revealed this kind of planning inadvertently by leaving a plan in the chow hall of the gym, he might have faced a court-martial. But it's now become a matter of policy that this administration is going to announce war plans in advance. It only increases the risk. You have to wonder, given the timing, right after the summit on countering violent extremism, if this is the administration trying to get a PR win, since this summit hasn't produced anything other concrete to justify the president's failures in counteracting the Islamic State in Iraq and
General
Syria.
General McInerney, do you agree? Because they're saying in April this may happen. We weren't. It's like February. Why would we be announcing that tonight?
Oh, I agree with Senator Cotton. It's absolutely bewildering. We are aiding and abetting the enemy. I do not understand why the president and the administration want to aid and abet the enemy.
Could it be to inspire, you know, the enemy to do something different between now and then, like get out of Mosul?
Well, maybe, but the way they have been acting, they're not going to get out of Mosul. They're going to stay probably, and it's still going to expose our forces to a certain risk because they're going to be doing a lot of defensive preparations, IEDs, different force positions, knowing an attack is coming, all those kind of things that are going to make our troops more vulnerable. So again, it's aiding and abetting the enemy.
So aiding and abetting, it's you're right. That's what am I crazy when I say he's a Muslim who's, I think he's setting up our troops to get slaughtered. I hate to say that, but the actions speak louder than words.
So you're questioning his validity as a commander-in-chief?
I am absolutely questioning his validity.
His strategy?
I think he's opening up not only our country, but our troops to some of the most dangerous situations you could possibly imagine. And I'm amazed that the military would allow this. Why isn't the chief of staff saying, hold on? Oh, is it because he's been replaced? Maybe.
And that reporter made a good point that if anybody else had released that information, a private or who knows, somebody in the CIA, they would be on trial for treason.
Absolutely. It boggles the mind. I cannot imagine, other than the fact, like Megyn Kelly has said, was, are they trying to maybe bluff them out of Mosul? Well, number one, you don't bluff with these people.
Right.
There's no bluffing with ISIS. These people are a death cult willing to die for their 72 virgins, and you don't bluff with people like that.
I was almost thinking maybe the opposite is possible if there was some type of strategy in releasing this information and that maybe more would congregate there and there's that many more targets to take out from the air. I don't know.
If we had
if there's any common sense to any of it. Maybe that's it.
If we had the guts to cut loose the B-52s and carpet bomb Mosul, I would say that'd be a great strategy. But I don't think we have the guts to do that.
No.
We'd never accept that collateral damage. You know, there's just no way. We don't have the guts. Barack Obama doesn't have the guts, put it that way, to do that. And I don't think he would, because the Muslims are his friends, including the radical Muslims.
Well, even in 2003, in the so-called shock and awe, it wasn't some carpet bombing. It was very laser strategic bombing that was trying to take out the regime.
Yeah.
You know, even during the bombing, you watch these television videos, you'd see cars driving around and people shopping and everything, because they knew that for the most part they were safe, because the United States was not going to obliterate a civilian population.
Yes. Yeah, and that just brings a point. I mean, Bush went in, and both Bushes went in and did that strategic targeting and wiped out, I think it was the strongest or second strongest army in the world at the time. In a matter of weeks.
Well, I think they were known in the first Gulf War as the sixth largest army in the world.
And
over a million men.
Yes. And we wiped them out in a matter of weeks. And we've been dragging along with 10, 20, 30,000 ISIS terrorists for years now.
Well, it blows me away that this ISIS army is not just like a handful of suicide bombers and dressed up in civilian clothes infiltrating certain civilian population areas. This is a conventional army in many ways, with heavy weapons, and we don't know where they're at and can't do anything.
Yeah.
And it took us so long. You know, this whole we're going to tilt to Asia, to the east. You know, we're going to have infrastructure around Australia and the South China Sea to kind of like confront the Chinese. It's like, no, everything should be focused right where we need it, and that's the Middle East.
Yeah, it's exit strategy for Barack Obama.
But how did ISIS just arise, like with thousands of people, and they seem to be so organized and funded and trained, and they have all this equipment, and we're like, wow, where did that come from?
Well, you know why? Because they knew Barack Obama was president. You knew he was going to pull out and leave a vacuum that they could fill, and nature abhors a vacuum. They knew it. They knew this way in advance.
But how could we not have seen it growing and building and developing? It's not like it just someone snapped their finger like an I Dream of Genie.
Oh, no.
And boom, they're there.
We saw it.
They materialized or came down from like Starship Enterprise and materialized.
We saw it. We had all the information. Barack Hussein Obama chose to ignore it. That's what he did, because in the end, I think that's what he wants. He wants a caliphate. He wants these people over there. He wants a disorganization and wants to bring more Muslims to America from refugee camps.
Well, the results seem to indicate that that's a strong possibility.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how else can you deny it?
One other thing I want to hit real quick. I wanted to touch on net neutrality and remind people, call your congressmen and senators to tell them we don't want this net neutrality. Do you got that last track ready for that, Derek? I want to hit this real quick. This is important, and you all need to work on it.
Have come out, and you've been very honest, I think, about your assessment of the 332 pages.
He sounds like Conan O'Brien.
And you have said this week that it's worse than you thought. What is the worst aspect of it, in your opinion?
To be honest, it's hard to pick just one, but a few of them are much higher broadband bills as a result of new taxes, billions of dollars of new taxes that are going to be showing up for your internet service. Secondly, the fact that there are going to be slower speeds and fewer broadband options throughout the country as businesses struggle to comply with these complex regulations, opening the door to trial lawyers filing lawsuits all over the country for this or that internet practice. And finally, and perhaps most perniciously when you think about it, the FCC for the first time is going to start second-guessing even what kind of service plan you have. And it explicitly mentions, for example, T-Mobile's Music Freedom, which will...
Okay, so... call your senators, call your congressmen, tell them net neutrality is bogus and not good for you. Until next week, go to thedailydrift.com.
See ya.
See ya.